Good morning and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you every Friday morning at 10 a.m. by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. AGLCA and our Admiral sponsors, Barber Marina, Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guides and Magazine, and Skipper Bob Publications invite you to join us as we explore the Great Loop every Friday morning with a show chock full of information that's useful to you, whether you are dreaming of, in the midst of, or planning a trip around the Great Loop. And don't forget to visit our ship store at www.greatloop.org, ship store. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Hi, everyone. As Beth told you, this is America's Great Loop Cruisers Association Weekly Blog Radio. With us today is Steve, as usual, Steve Cromer, who is our customer service and technical person, and I'm Janice Cromer. I'm the director of AGLCA, and I basically do a lot of planning on the rendezvous and also customer service, which is my first love. For those non-members out there listening to the show, the Great Loop is the continuous waterway that includes the eastern portion of North America, and that encompasses the Atlantic and Gulf Intracoastal waterways, the Great Lakes, the Canadian Heritage Canals, and the inland rivers of America's heartland. AGLCA, as we call ourselves for short, is an organization of people who share a sense of adventure and curiosity about the Great Loop. Our primary purpose is to give you information and enhance the overall experience of the Loop. Our website is www.greatloop.org. There's a lot of free information for those non-members, and of course we'd love for you to become a member so you can join right from our webpage. I'm very, very happy to announce our guest host this week, Dave Fuller of Acworth, Georgia, and his wife, Nan Allen, is kind of standing by for moral support. Dave is actually a member of the Atlanta Sail and Power Squadron and also the Coast Guard Auxiliary. Dave is very, very active in the Coast Guard Auxiliary, and right now he is the district captain north for the Coast Guard Auxiliary 7th District. That means he's responsible for 6 divisions, 34 flotillas, and approximately 1,800 members. So Dave is uniquely qualified to talk to us about today's subject, PERBs, EPERBs, and AEDs. Dave, welcome, and thank you so much for helping us out today.
Yes, Janice, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Glad to be here.
Well, let's start with what do PERB, EPERB, and AED stand for? They're acronyms that we throw around all the time, but what do they actually stand for?
Well, Janice, you know that the government likes acronyms. You know, we've got basically alphabet soup out there, you know, everything from the IRS on down. And when we get into marine electronics, talking about this morning, EPERBs, and that stands for Emergency Position Indicating Radio Beacon. And what EPERBs are is one other form of communication that you can use if you're in an emergency situation. Now, you have, or you should have, more than one method of communicating with other people. You know, a lot of our members use cell phones, and they have their use, and obviously if you're close to a cell tower, they do have some function. You can call 911 or whatever for help, and they'll dispatch somebody to you. The disadvantage of just using a cell phone is, A, you have to be within distance of getting a signal, and B, you're only talking to a 911 operator on the other end. So then we also have VHF radios. All of our boats have those. And the advantage to those is obviously other boaters listening on the same channel will hear your distress and may be able to come to your aid even quicker. And I'll talk a little bit about the DSC radios. That stands for Digital Selective Calling. I'll talk about that a little bit later in the program here. Going beyond that, once you're out of range of cell phone signals, once you're out of range of VHF radio signals, now you've got a bit of a problem if you need to communicate some kind of a distress situation. And so that's where an EPIRB comes in. And what an EPIRB does is sends a signal on 406 megahertz. Now, I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty details of all these different frequencies and so forth, only to say that if you were to be looking for a used EPIRB online, say on eBay or someplace like that, you may come across a 243 megahertz EPIRB, and if you do, don't buy one because those are obsolete and that frequency is no longer being monitored. So only to say the ones that they're selling now are all 406 megahertz, so just make sure it meets that. And if you buy a new one, they'll all be 406, nothing to be concerned about there. But there are still a few of the 243 megahertz on the market, in the used market. They're not being sold as new, but in the used market. But basically, what the EPIRB does is sends up that digital coded signal. It's kind of like a cell phone number that's been assigned to that particular unit. And for this to really be effective, you have to go to the NOAA website and register your EPIRB, and it'll ask you the information of the type of boat that you have, the length, the color of it, your home port, a lot of good information that it puts into this database, and they'll load you into the database. And then if you ever set this satellite signal off, your EPIRB off, then what will happen is the signal will go up to the satellite. They will notify, depending on where this is, if it's over land, they'll notify the Air Force. But if it's over coastal areas or out on the ocean, they'll notify the Coast Guard.
So these can actually be used on land also? For some reason, I thought they were just applicable to cruising.
No, actually, and I'm going to get into that when I get down to the PPIRBs a little bit later. They can be used anywhere, but and I'll get into the uses of the whether EPIRB versus PPIRB. I'll get to that in just a second. I want to explain how this works. So once it sends this signal up to the satellite, it says, "Hey, I've got a problem," and then the Coast Guard. Let's assume you're using this in coastal areas. Then the Coast Guard will go into the database, and they'll look in there, and they'll look at your contact information. And you're asked in the registration process to provide somebody that would be a contact that would be normally at home. And, you know, you can put in a home phone, a cell phone, whatever you want to put in. And what they'll do is they'll call that person, and they'll say, "Hey, I've got an EPIRB going off. Dave Fuller has got this EPIRB, and it's going off in the Bahamas." And if the person who I've designated as my contact says, "Well, wait a minute, he's in Denver this week hiking in the Rocky Mountains," well, they'll know that that is a false alarm, and they will not send search and rescue personnel out for me. I don't remember what the exact number is. I think I've had that written down somewhere, but somewhere in the order of around 80% of the activations of EPIRBs turn out to be false alarms. And they don't want to commit search and rescue people and the cost and the all of the things that go along with that to a false distress call. So that's why they verify that. But let's say that I've set off my EPIRB and I'm in the Bahamas, and my contact says, "Well, yeah, he's supposed to be in the Bahamas." Well, now they've got somebody confirming that that's where I'm supposed to be. They've got a satellite signal saying, "Hey, I'm in distress." So now they're going to dispatch the search and rescue. Now, from a search and rescue standpoint, I can tell you that of the two components of a SAR, that stands for search and rescue, more government alphabet soup, that of the two parts, search and rescue, the search part is oftentimes the most difficult part. The rescue part is far more easy once we know where to go find people. And that's what makes these things so valuable. Because even if they don't have a built-in GPS to give the latitude and longitude precisely, they do have the capability to triangulate your position by multiple passes of the satellite. And usually they'll have an indication that you have difficulty within an hour of you setting it off, and they'll be able to triangulate your position down to about a 2-mile radius in about 3 hours. So even if the EPIRB that you buy does not have a built-in GPS, it will take a little bit longer to find you precisely, but, you know, 2-square-mile area, gosh, if they could narrow down where a person is to 2-square-mile area, that's a huge, huge improvement over what usually occurs during search and rescue missions.
David, so, I can interrupt for a minute. Did you say 80% are false signals?
That is correct. Of EPIRB activations are false alarms. And some of those were set off as tests. So that's where some of that comes from. But that's why they verify it before they commit search and rescue forces. It's tremendously expensive to send helicopters out, to send surface vessels out. Not only is it expensive from a personnel and fuel standpoint, but it does put the rescuers in harm's way, and that's always part of the calculation.
What is the cause of the high percent? I mean, is it technology that's not correct, or
no?
I mean, it's just like a tremendously high percentage.
Well, the instructions you receive when you buy one of these EPIRBs will tell you to test it during the first 5 minutes of the hour. And if you really want to make sure that that no false alarm goes off, there is an 800 number in the instructions that you can call them and say, I'm going to test my EPIRB, and then you set it off and test it. And then they'll know to disregard that's a test.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Dave.
Yes.
How did NOAA end up with the responsibility for this? It seems kind of far afield for them.
Well, I really don't know the answer to that question. That's not one I anticipated hearing, other than to say that I kind of alluded to this earlier, they can be used over land, and so it has to be determined whether or not this signal is something that should be handled by the Coast Guard or if it's something that should be handled by the Air Force. And how they decided the Air Force was going to do it, I mean, it's pretty obvious why the Coast Guard would handle ones that are occurring over water, but I don't know how the Air Force ended up with the responsibility of doing the searches for the ones that occur over land, but that's pretty much the way it goes. And my understanding of that part of it, and I'm not an expert in that area, is that I think the Air Force turns over some of that to the Civil Air Patrol to do some of that as well. They may be doing the bulk of that work. But going back to there's various kinds of EPIRBs, and again, I don't want to get too far down in the weeds here, but there's what's called Category 1 and Category 2. And basically the difference is, in Category 2 is an automatic release. In other words, you mount it on your boat, and if your boat was to sink, it would automatically release and start floating around and set off its signal. Category 1 basically means that you have to manually grab it and activate it. So the ones that automatically do their thing, and they're a little bit more expensive, generally around $100, $150 more for the Type 2 versus the Type 1s. There are different models that have different bells and whistles. Basic models, you can buy a basic model around $450, one with all the bells and whistles, automatic deployment with a digital readout, digital display, and so forth. That goes, you know, maybe around $850, $900. So they really vary depending on how many bells and whistles you want to get, but they all do about the same thing. Well, they all do exactly the same thing. It's just how much more deluxe you want it. Now, an EPIRB generally will broadcast its position for somewhere between 24 and 48 hours. The battery is designed to last at least 24 to 48 hours. So most of our members are going to be doing coastal cruising, and 24 to 48 hours is more than enough time a battery life to be rescued, to get your signal across and so forth. So if you're going to be doing big, long, open ocean crossings, you know, you want the longest one that you can do because you may be, you know, quite a ways out and quite a ways away from help. So, you know, pick the one that's based on the cruising area that you plan to do. Now, I mentioned PPIRBS. Now, PPIRBS are the same as an EPIRB, but they're called a personal indicator, and they're a personal size. They're much, much smaller. They do exactly the same thing that their big brothers do, but they do it much in a much more compact package. The disadvantage is most personal locator beacons, the PPIRBS, do not float on their own. You have to hold them out of the water. And you do have to hold them out of the water and hold the antenna up in order for them to transmit properly. So there is a, you know, if you're actually in the water, they're a little bit harder to do. The full-size EPIRBS float upright with their antennas pointing up, and you don't have to do anything to them. They just kind of float around. The PPIRBS you would physically have to hold out of the water. I was only able to find a couple of them that floated, and none of them that did it with their antennas sticking up in the air far enough to, you know, to give you a good signal. So that's one of the disadvantages. The biggest advantage to a personal EPIRB is you can stick it in your life vest. And they're a little bit larger. They're basically the size of a large cell phone or maybe a couple of cell phones. They're basically that size. Battery life on those, a little bit less, generally 12 to 18 hours worth of life in the batteries. So they don't go for quite as long. But, again, for somebody that's doing coastal cruising, that should be more than enough because even under the worst circumstances, they're going to have a position fix on you within 3 hours, and it may even be less than that. It may only be, you know, an hour or less. And if you have one of them that have the built-in GPS, you know, it might just be a matter of just a few minutes before they have a fix on you. Now, one additional thing that not all of these have, and again, you're going to have to do your research to figure out which one has this and which ones don't. There's one other thing in here that is a possibility of might be worth getting, and that's the additional transmitter at 121.5 megahertz. And I know I'm throwing a bunch of numbers at everybody here, but why that's important is because that's the international air distress frequency. And if you were to have an aircraft trying to home in on you, they can do radio direction finding on the 121.5 megahertz and be able to follow right to it. It's almost like following a laser beam. They can come right to you. So the final little bit of you know, trying to locate you, that you know, just acts like a laser beam to draw them right to you, especially if you're in an area where there's a lot of a set and drift. In other words, where the current or the wind is carrying you around. So those do have some use as well. The small personal EPIRBS, I've seen them as cheap as $250, and the ones that's got all the bells and whistles and digital displays and all that sort of thing, they go as high as I've seen them around $420, $430, somewhere in that neighborhood. So they do vary greatly in price.
And Dave, I need to interrupt for a minute. We're going to run a quick commercial from Troller Midwest. Just take a minute.
Okay.
Ken and Karen Schuler are at the helm of Trawlers Midwest Incorporated. They list and sell trawlers all over the U.S. and Canada, carrying the largest list of trawlers found anywhere. Trawlers ranging from pocket trawlers to long-range cruising trawlers with multiple staterooms will meet the needs of many different buyers and different budgets. In-stock Ranger Tug trawlers are available for immediate purchase. If you're interested in a brokerage trawler, they will help you find the right one for your planned usage. They sell the dreams, you build the memories. For information, visit www.trawlersmidwest.com. Trawlers Midwest is a proud Commander sponsor of AGLCA.
Thank you.
Dave?
Yes.
Just before you go on, the comment that I have is EPIRBs and personal locator beacons, like everything else in electronics, the prices are coming down steadily.
Yes.
Janice and I each have personal locator beacons that we bought, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago, tops. And they were around $750 at that point. So if they're down to $450, that'll give you an idea what the price curve is on them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we just got back from the Miami Boat Show, and I got an opportunity to talk to some of the vendors there, and they have come down substantially in price, and most of the vendors are giving you some kind of rebate or some kind of an extra incentive to buy them, and, you know, different packs of other safety gear and so forth. So it'd be a good opportunity to check into the, you know, different vendors and see what's available. I wanted to mention one other thing that's in the line of the EPIRBs, and it's a new product that's only been out. I think the FCC only approved it in April of last year, and these are personal AIS beacons. For those of you that know what AIS, the automatic identification system, where you can see other commercial vessels, usually it's commercial, and some of us have those on our boats. And they have a personal beacon that is similar to the personal EPIRBs, and it works on AIS. So generally, if you were to have one of these, as long as you were within range of somebody that had a AIS receiver, they'd be able to see you on this. So that's one other level, and they run around $300 or so. I just wanted to briefly mention those. I mentioned earlier about the DSC radios, the digital selective calling radios. Anybody that's bought a new VHF radio in about the last 4 or 5 years, it'll have that DSC capability. And you know it's got that because it'll have a little red button on the front. You probably have to lift up the thing and punch the button and says, you know, emergency or danger or something like that. And if you have that interfaced with your GPS on your boat, it'll send out a distress signal, including the identifier of your boat, which is called an MMSI number. And, it's about like a cell phone number. It's a unique number that's been assigned to that particular radio. And it'll send that out, broadcast that to everybody else that has a DSC radio, and they'll be able to hear your distress call. And it will send the latitude, longitude of your position if it is hooked up to your GPS. And that one, you have to register that. You have to receive the MMSI number. And West Marine Boat US does that for free. And I think CTOW does it as well. They issue those numbers, and you register your radio, and then you simply enter that number into the radio, and it's automatic from that standpoint. If you want to go for more information to that, I would recommend West Marine has a very, very nice tutorial on their website. If you just go to the West Marine website and type in DSC, it will take you to their advisor series, and they have a really nice tutorial. It takes about 30 minutes, explains the whole system and how it works and so forth. Can definitely recommend that. Captain Marks with Landfall Navigation has a real nice advisor on his site as well concerning EPIRBs and PIRBs. He would be a good place to do some investigation here if you're interested more in EPIRBs and PIRBs.
And Henry Marks at Landfall is a sponsor of AGLCA, so they can definitely help you out.
Absolutely. One other thing I want to say about EPIRBs is they are a one-time purchase. You only buy them once. You update your data in the NOAA database at any time you want to do that. Anytime anything changes, you need to go onto that database and update it, your contact numbers and so forth and so on. And the other thing is you have to keep aware of is these batteries in these units are 5-year batteries. They're designed to be replaced at the end of 5 years, whether you've used them or not. So keep that in mind, that that's something that you need to keep up with.
Dave, do I remember correctly that NOAA requires you to once a year minimum update your database? It seems like I get an email every year.
Actually, it's every 2 years.
Every 2 years, okay.
Yeah. And if you want to do it more often than that, that's no problem. But your current registration expires at the end of 2 years, and they will send you an email reminding you to do so.
Okay, well, we're just about out of time. We were going to touch on AEDs, but I think we'll leave that for another show. This has been very, very informative. Steve, do you have any questions?
No, I've been asking them as we went along, so I'm good.
Okay, I feel poorly about the not covering the AEDs. If anybody in the meantime wants information, we have a very valued sponsor, Chesapeake AED. I'm just trying to find them in our listing. Hold on 1 second. I lost them, but it's Chesapeake AED, and they are on our webpage. Here it is, Chesapeake AED Services. It's www.chesapeakeservices.com in Essex, Maryland, 410-238-2242. I'm sure they can help you out with information until we can cover it on another radio show. Dave, this has been great. Is there anything you want to add before we close?
Well, the only other thing I wanted to add, Janice, is you know, we're all about boating safety in both the Power Squadron and in the Coast Guard Auxiliary. And one of the things that all of our members can do to make themselves safer is to get an annual vessel safety check. And in order to do that, the easiest way to do that is go to safetyseal.net. And that will take you to a website where you can go on and do a virtual safety check yourself. In other words, before you have an inspector come out and inspect your vessel, you can do your own inspection. And then once you've satisfied yourself that you've got all everything that you need, then on that same website, you can go to the, it says, I want a VSC. And you type in your zip code where you are, and it will bring up a list of all the different examiners that's in your area. And it'll send an email to those folks, and then one of them, or maybe more than one of them, might even contact you and set up a time to do vessel safety checks. Also, at the rendezvous, I have been heading up doing vessel safety checks at the rendezvous. Unfortunately, at the May rendezvous, I'm not going to be able to be in attendance because I've got some other things on my calendar, so I won't be at the May rendezvous, but I do plan on being at the fall rendezvous in October. But there should be some other Power Squadron members or some other Coast Guard Auxiliary members that will be able to do the vessel safety checks for you.
I'll definitely arrange the vessel safety checks to be given at the Norfolk Marina, the Waterside Marina in Norfolk, Virginia, during the rendezvous.
Okay, very good. That's probably the best thing that most boaters that haven't done it can do.
Okay,
so,
great.
That's really all I had, Janice.
Thank you so much.
Much.
I can't believe how much I learned. This is fantastic. I didn't know much at all to begin with. Thank you very much. And next Friday, we're going to be doing something unique. Usually, Steve and I broadcast from our home office, but next Friday, we're going to do our first on live site at Waterway Guide Skipper Bob offices in Delta Marine, in Deltaville, Virginia, and we'll be talking about the very complicated process to get information from the waterway into the updated guide. So listen in next Friday at 10 o'clock. And Dave, once again, thank you very much.
Been my pleasure. Thank you, Janice.
Bye.
Good day.
Bye-bye, y'all.
Okay, thanks, Steve.